whatever niche audience that you have, already bank on that and expand. Whatever niche and strength that you already have, keep mastering that and slowly expand in these other things as well. Aim for perfection in almost everything.
All about creating a passive income through content creation. This is the Adjective Content Creators Podcast with your host Kunal Lake.
Make a unicorn or go make popcorn. Today we have with us someone who loves to write quotes, create end-to-end data science projects, then write about them on Medium. Although he wears a lot of hats, today we'll be exploring the side of Ramsri, which creates content not just for LinkedIn or for inspiring others, but also technical content. Welcome again, Ramsri, this time to the Adjective Content Creators Podcast.
Thanks a lot, Kunal. Very great to be here again. Very excited.
Ramsri was the first person that I've ever podcasted with, and it was an amazing journey. So we thought we'll do this time on content creation, because he has also evolved so much around that area and so many things happened since then. So, I mean, you now have your own website, Ramsri.
Yeah. So I think this year was quite a journey for me, both in terms of like content creation as well as data science. So I started off just open sourcing content and open sourcing my data science projects. From there, blogging on Medium became an active thing for me. And then moving on to LinkedIn and creating specifically targeted content there, and again igniting my passion of writing and writing, getting into motivational quotes. Yeah, quite a journey.
Absolutely. And so many things you have already spoken about, Ramsri, and we'll be getting into so many of these details. But, you know, let's start with something LinkedIn that you're saying, because currently you have done so much work on this. So just wanted to get your journey on the first thing that you ever did with LinkedIn. And then, you know, from there, let's see how we can, where we can go.
Sure. So I think like most of us, like I had a profile for almost 7 to 8 years or more than that, close to 10 years. Mostly moderately active, open it when you need job. And apply to some profiles or things like that. That's been my journey with LinkedIn almost until the beginning of this year. Then once I made the transition from my previous startup, what I did realize was that all this offline content that I have in my mind, it could be like data science or my experience working across Silicon Valley, Singapore, India, startup, as well as AI projects, all these things. I thought it needs to be present online, and there might be an audience who might be benefiting from it in one way or the other. So what I started initially was to share my Medium blogs on LinkedIn. I started with that. And slowly got started getting traction. Then a few of the big players in data science, it could be like Made with ML or some other Hugging Face, all these things started retweeting and sharing my content on LinkedIn, things like that started happening, and I started getting likes in the couple of hundreds, which I did not imagine previously. From there on, I started writing content, and I think the biggest kick came when I took an old story of mine. So just for listeners, when I was a kid in grade 6, I wrote a letter to Abdul Kalam, writing some of my poems back then. And I got a reply back. So from there on, how my journey began to have a very successful career in Silicon Valley. So I just clubbed all of the journey into a short post, and it became a massive viral thing, almost 1 million views on LinkedIn alone, plus more than 500,000 views through Facebook on Better India, as well as StoryPick and few other websites. And very surprisingly, I wrote that story in almost less than an hour. And I did not even have an idea of what to post. I just opened LinkedIn and an idea struck me that why don't I connect these things? And that's how in 1 hour, I just gathered few pictures of mine and wrote a story, and it became such a viral hit. Yeah.
Absolutely. In fact, my next question was this viral content itself, but you told it very nicely. So back then, you know, before this viral post, how many followers did you have? And like after that, how many followers you got, and how many friends requests, and what was the all that background thing you had to do to manage all of this suddenly viral post?
Absolutely. So back then, probably I had like 4,000 or something like that followers. And I always used to think, what do these followers, like 15,000 plus people, what do they do that normal people don't do, or how do you get there? So I used to have few friends of mine who were like slightly ahead, like 8,000, 9,000 followers. And I used to constantly think what they have done right and things like that. Fortunately, with one viral post, I think it added almost like 6,000 to 7,000 followers in a week. And it was almost like I did not ever imagine that I had to blindly accept quite a lot of requests. Every day there were like 300, 400 requests that I was getting. And more importantly, messages started pouring in, that some of the messages were like, this is the best story I have heard in my entire 30 years or something like that. Like quite a lot of people, at least like 4 or 5, had a personal attachment to that story and told it's the best story they have heard in their lifetime. So I was like overwhelmed by the reception. That I did not even imagine something of that scale could be possible by me, because I'm not a content creator per se. Like I'm just like a data scientist or coder and have some background in entrepreneurship. But how I could connect and write a personal story that people could relate to and get motivated from, that was like extremely overwhelming for me. And very happy that my father and mother were also like, finally, the hard work started paying off. People started recognizing you. And a few of the biggest surprises were few random people that I don't even know of offline. My father met them at some small birthday party or something. They also mentioned about the LinkedIn post apparently.
Oh, so small world.
Yeah, and I was like, okay, 1 million views when there are 60 million active users on LinkedIn in India, and you get 1 million views, it's almost like every 50 you hit one person, right? So the odds are very high. So it's not a small count at all. And Facebook also had quite a lot of reach as well through Better India and StoryPick.
Absolutely. And then the magnitude for the people that read the article and from that respective websites also, right?
Absolutely.
So amazing. So now, so when you did that story right now, you know, I noticed that you're talking about it as a story, right? And previously, you know, it was like, I'm creating a content for LinkedIn, but now you said it's a story. And what perspective change did you get in terms of now shifting and writing about stories? And then could you replicate some stories that worked after that?
Yeah. So one thing that I realized from that was that there's always scope, there's always platform to give that virality. And what gets connected with the audience, I would say, I wouldn't say there's a science behind it, but there are few things that we can get right, which is always a personal story gets quite a lot of reach. And the main thing is how you structure the story. So I have told the story that I got letter from APJ Abdul Kalam sir quite a lot of times to my friends. They said positive words and that was it. There was never a virality or the wow factor to it. But here how I started with a small narrative that back then, 16 years ago, my mom showed me an unusual letter to me. It was addressed from the president. And then there were a lot of high points in there that I mentioned things like, no one told me it was impossible. So I went ahead and did it. And in the end of the story, there's a very clear question to the audience. If a small town kid could do it without any background and a mentor, what can you do with it, with all the opportunities that you have? If I could get this far, what can you do it? What can you do? So I think that kind of like it's a positive provocation to the people who are reading that. And it began with a personal story. There were quite a lot of highs in the middle as well, where I took the route of not taking the traditional path and going and chasing dreams and achieving success, right? So that was one of the biggest connector with people. And since then, I would say that I wasn't able to get something of similar virality, but my content creation game kind of changed in the sense that I think influencers are like two kinds, most of them. One, they are like distributors of content. So they gather great content from all over the world. When I mean content, it's very generic. It could be catered to a specific niche like data science or just anything related to marketing or things like that. And so there are influencers who distribute content. Then there are influencers who generate original content. Now, I think both of these add massive value to the community. One is heavy curation of content and delivering only the great content to the audience that you have, the followers that you have. The second thing is original content through anecdotes, through stories, your personal journey, things that you have in your mind. And I took the second route and I made a conscious choice to bring in those untold stories, narratives, and personal anecdotes through the experience that I have. Fortunately, geographical as well as breadth in not just technology, but entrepreneurship and all these things helped me to put together content that is unique and hits multiple important nodes and combines. It's a multidisciplinary content. So I was able to get into that multidisciplinary content creation. That's only through your combining through your unique experience, you will be able to get that. So once I tapped that potential of mine, I started generating content with that motto that let me take a very personal approach to content, which is let me bring in thoughts, ideas, stories in the world that are not available offline or online anywhere else, that are brought only by me to the community that's out there. Yeah.
Absolutely, and very nicely put, Ramshree, like the two type of content creators, right? The curators and the ones that create. And the ones that create is, I'm personally inspired to go that route because I think so the personal narrative, the story that you want to tell, right, is far more fulfilling and inspiring to others than like curating content. No doubt curating content also helps a lot more people in scale. But let's say, you know, it's also like what kind of audience do you want to connect with, right? For me, I think if I can connect with the audience that personally know me and are inspiring from the journey I am, I'm more than content, right? It's, I don't want like so many followers also, but to be able to cater to a very few and niche through the unique skills that we develop over the time.
Right. And adding on to that point, I think you brought up a very valuable point. So there's a new trend called micro-influencers. So micro-influencers, simply put, they are not like influencers that have millions of followers, rather anywhere between, let's say, 5K to 100K followers. And one very interesting thing for brands as well to follow these micro-influencers and get them to promote their things as well is that micro-influencers target on a specific niche and have a very strong following within what they're creating. And it's statistically, it's proven, or statistics say that almost micro-influencers have 7x selling capability when compared to a regular influencer. What I'm trying to say is that let's say you want to sell a product. If you probably get like Cristiano Ronaldo and pay X amount and get reach, that reach is 7x if you just distribute the same amount of money equally to all the micro influencers. So all of a sudden, micro influencers, the concept of having personalized content and creating a niche following, even if it is small, has quite a lot of value to the brands.
Coincidentally, I was reading one article and researching on podcasting. So there's a statistic that says the 80% of the marketing spends in the future is going to be spent on micro influencers.
Nice. So
I mean, there's a lot of sponsorship and you know, things coming onto micro influencers on their way. But you have to up the game and really choose your niche and bring your unique personality out.
Absolutely.
It has to do with a lot of how truthful and authentic you are, also, right?
Yes.
Rather than putting up a face and showing up something, right?
Totally. And I think that interesting point of picking up a niche, to be honest, I don't think I have mastered it. I struggle with three verticals, which is entrepreneurship, data science, and motivation. And I still haven't found the right balance, in the sense that sometimes on Twitter, not many people like regular motivation for me because people are following exclusive for data science, and vice versa even. General people who are interested in motivation, they don't want that data science to pop up, right? So anyways, just an interesting thing that I always been struggling with is how do you pick just one niche and go at it?
To be frank, even I'm struggling with that. My niches is basically beginner level on data science through Excel, SQL, and how do you put all of that together for reporting and all of that.
So that's
there. And the other thing is like content creation and using tools. So I'm really good at using tools, and so I'm trying to put out content in both these areas. And yet I'm not able to find the balance of how things are going to be working out. And in fact, another new one came into the picture, and it's basically about journaling, productivity, and creating processes and all of that thing, right? So I absolutely love that. And there are quite a few people who do that, and I think so that's another thing that I want to try out. A concept of, let's say, a second brain for note taking and all of that. So these things are like coming up, and I'm pretty much interested in doing that. And plus, with on top of that, the content creation, because you need a place where you can store all your notes together, re-reference them, re-link them, and then be able to, from that particular place, create more and more content, right? So that's one other place I'm exploring, and I find it personally much more closer to me than other things. But let's see where the journey takes me there. Probably we'll be doing something on the second brain once I introduce to this concept also, and you'll see that you'll definitely relate to this concept very easily.
Nice.
So on this, I'm sure you have been writing consistently and you're writing daily. I know that practice. I mean, only through writing daily will you figure out what works, what does not work, and all of that, right? So what sort of tools do you use in the background for writing? Maybe let's say grammar corrections or you know, hashtags, and then maybe any other tool that helps you scheduling. So what are the entire process looks like for you?
So since I'm kind of a content creator who's new to the game, I won't say that I have a suite of tools like any other professional content creator, but I do use two or three. So of course, for grammar, I use Grammarly, and mostly I sometimes use Publer to schedule posts, but once in a while I feel that the length of the post and all those things, if I have to fine-tune quite a lot, I usually post in the original platforms itself. And one more thing that I use is create quotes cover. Quotescover.com. So I use quotescover.com to create all my motivational quotes with great visualizations and text on it. And it's pretty cheap as well, almost $2 or $3 per month. But you get to create high quality posts. And I pick the images from Pixabay, Unsplash, and especially on LinkedIn, these PDFs that you can upload, those are very powerful for reach as well as good visualization. So I use Canva for most of them to create those. And one interesting thing is that I do have a small part-time intern who kind of comes up with some potential ideas and channels, things like that. One thing is that it's not that I wanted an intern and I looked for one. Most of the people who reach out to me genuinely, like who are passionate, I try to help in one way or the other. Either in just giving them advice, or if I have any potential use case for me, small internship, things like that. But Tarun, he reached out to me via LinkedIn and said he is interested in content creation. And this happened during the time of my viral post itself. So from there, so it's very helpful for me in the sense that I recently launched my, I would call merchandise on Instamojo, where I launched desktop wallpapers, mobile wallpapers, and 2021 calendar, desk calendar with my original motivational quotes. So he helped me come up with some strategies on how I can create these. And so quite a lot of ideation or coming up with plans. So what I have noticed is that most of us kind of like think in one direction, and sometimes you don't have the time to explore a few options and find the best ones, etc. And I would say that ever since the last 2 to 3 years, I was trying to support one or two interns continuously, and you don't have to pay them anything very heavily. Even somewhere between 5,000 to 7,000, things like that, if they're still in college and just doing 10 hours per month or 15 hours per month, it's very useful for you to even grow as a person through mentoring them, as well as get some work done from them and help them grow and get them connected with the real world more. I always believe in the power of youth. I think they always have the best ideas, and sometimes you need to combine the experience that we have after 10 years of work being in the industry to the energy and ideas that youth have. So it's a good contrast for me to keep in touch with young grads as well. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And in fact, just before this podcast, I was speaking to another person called Ishan. He's in third year VTech. We did a small 1 hour show on how he's doing machine learning codes and all of that thing. And it was amazing to see the kind of techniques or the research method, the kind of clarity he has of what he wants to do. And it sort of left me touched, moved, right? It was like, oh my God, he's so clear. If I had just been, let's say, 5% or 10% of that clarity back then, I'd have done so much more, right? And rightly said, they are like amazingly inspiring. Right. And it's very rare to find such gems who have that energy and enthusiasm for doing all of that.
Exactly.
Okay, so nice. I mean, and now you brought up an interesting point where you told you put the merchandise and all of that on InstaMojo, right? Now, one thing I realized is that, and we have spoken about this earlier too, that it's easy to set up a e-commerce store and through multiple platforms, or let's say only a digital selling platform, right?
Right.
It's easy to set it up. But then on the flip side, there's a lot of things. Like you now have certain, like you have a mall, but now you have to get footfalls and then you have to get purchases, right?
Right.
That is a different ballgame. Now, we are not built to sell something on a digital market, right? Like we know we can build content, but again, you have to try to sell it, and there's this whole pipeline. So what's your journey in that? Like if you can share some numbers, that will be awesome.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, I think selling digital products is kind of more of a modern thing, I would say, that people have been picking up only in the recent years. And mostly when people thought about digital products, they used to think about selling courses and selling ebooks. Then going beyond that, if you are a photographer, perhaps you can sell the best photos that you have for the year as yearbook or something like that. And more pure concepts are like dropshipping, where you don't store any content. Sorry, not content, but let's say you're selling coffee mugs with your own quotes. Now, you don't go and print 100 coffee mugs with your quotes, keep them in your storeroom, and whenever an order gets, you go and ship them manually or do the same thing through Amazon or Flipkart or any other route. So that used to be popular thing, and now slowly the influencers or digital people who prefer the digital route, or people who are used to selling only digital products, things like that, they prefer the route of drop shipping, where any customer can order the quotes with your mug, the mug with your quotes, and it's printed on demand and shipped to them instead of you holding up an inventory. I think all these concepts of digital products, drop shipping, these are picking up, and especially in India, one thing is that the audience are not used to this digital products and things like that. So it goes both ways, that from the content creator side, you need to bring in these things and create some awareness about it, and also the economy and younger audience and digital audience pick this up soon. So it should go both ways. And for me, I think the digital product journey has been very interesting. Of course, coming to the numbers, I won't say that I didn't have any massive success. Probably I sold 8 to 9 calendars and physical calendars. So these are like desk calendars, 2021 calendars. And quotes, probably 3 or 4 wallpapers of desktop, and similarly for mobile wallpapers. And the best part is that I did not ask anyone to buy. I mean,
yes.
So of course it fails the purpose of that, right? So So this, to be honest, the launching of this is not to really gain any monetary benefit. Of course, there's with the small numbers, there's very less to gain from. More,
correct.
It is more on, have you established yourself as somebody who can at least influence few people, and do they get motivated by you? Or if you've been in entrepreneurship, there is one main thing that customers will say great things, give great feedback, but the moment you ask for money is when they take a back step. It is extremely hard to get money out of the pocket. My biggest goal was, can I do that even at a small scale? And I'm glad that without me personally messaging anybody and asking them to buy, all I did was to keep on my social channels that, hey, I launched this thing. If you're interested, please go and buy. And very happy with whatever response I got. So at least 3 or 4 people, I guess, have my wallpapers on their desktop, mobile, and a few people, 7-8 people have 2021 calendar on their desk. It's great to know that. I think that got me a head start in thinking big. Of course, I made 4-step that I took was to actually print all those 100 calendars, desk calendars. So I have still about 80 to 90 of them. I have one small thing that I wanted to try out, which was to post in my alumni group. So I graduated from BITS, so I was planning to post in BITS alumni group that I launched these things. And I'm positive that I might get few from them, because it's a close-knit community and they do have decent spending power as well. So I'm expecting few from there. And one more interesting thing that I was going to try was to run ads on YouTube and Instagram, especially during the December 25th to January 5th time, because that's when the calendars are most sold. So that's the right time. So I wanted to give that a try. And one of the, I think the most important thing that came out of this was not the actual output itself, but the planning. So I, with Tarun, I ideated on how can we monetize my original motivational quotes. Let's build a complete blueprint of how you can launch merchandise and how you can do other things like offering quotes as a service and doing offline events. So we came up with some interesting ideas, of course, calendars and wallpapers. Then beyond that, you have masks, coffee mugs, pencils, coffee table books. And when it comes to targeting people, so what we interestingly thought was, let's reach out to these micro influencers who have some people, followers under them, but they don't have the content. So if so there's a concept called ghostwriting. You might be aware of it, that so if someone wants to write their original autobiography, they hire somebody, get it written. And even let's say Taylor Swift's Swift wants a great song. Sometimes mm-hmm. she does not write and gets ghostwriters who give mm-hmm. the song to her. Similarly, I thought if there is a big influencer, micro influencer, or even a celebrity, Bollywood celebrity or someone like that, can I sell my quotes? I will ghostwrite mm-hmm. for them. I take a mm-hmm. paycheck, like maybe 50,000 rupees or 5,000 rupees, however they are willing to pay. And mm-hmm. that quote will be theirs. They use it and it's theirs. Like ghostwriting mm-hmm. quotes. That was one interesting concept.
Yes.
And the other thing was like for movies, etc., where they need powerful punchlines and motivational quotes, etc., can we write something for them? Mm-hmm. And again, like Nike ads, Adidas ads, or Boost ads, can I write mm-hmm. a marketing copy, like 50 to 100 words, that's a great motivational content for the next ad and mm-hmm. make money from that? And again, offline events like going to book fairs, art fairs, selling my merchandise there, and even mm-hmm. going beyond that into like interior design for restaurants and showrooms with a motivational theme.
Right.
So I kind of thought about the whole gamut of what you can do and kind of like wrote a very detailed game plan and even posted it as a blog on Medium, how I plan to monetize my original motivational quotes.
Wow, I mean, just to see you think is amazing, Ramsri. Like, you take a topic and then you take it to breadth and depth and to possible things, not, you know, thinking about whether it's going to work out or no, but at least you have given it that true thought or thinking it's required to, you know, pick up something. And I think so. I find this... one second. Huh? Yeah. It's just saying... lost connection to server, attempting to reconnect. Yeah, but the recording is going on, I guess. Okay.
Yeah.
But I find it personally very insightful because these are the kind of struggles or the thought or thinking process are usually not discussed about when somebody is trying to sell your course of creating an e-commerce website or trying to tell you like what are the permutation and combinations you need to think to, you know, have something work out, right? You'll see a lot of failures before you see something working out, right?
Right.
And another interesting area which you are getting into, Ramsri, and that's called copywriting, right? So basically, to be writing that one punchline that makes conversions or doing that, right? I think so. Naturally, you're going to go into that path and take a course on copywriting and see how that works out for you. Because you have already got a taste of that, the kind of question a small town guy, you know, can do this, you can do it, right? That itself is just copywriting. And, you know, and if you knew all of these tips and tricks on copywriting, I think so you'll do a lot better in getting whatever you want to get done.
Yeah. Interestingly, I've been asked to write a few on Upwork. I wrote few blogs/things for other entrepreneur, for other companies in the dubbing mm-hmm. space and others. So mm-hmm. Getting paid for writing mm-hmm. non-technical content was kind of also a reinforcement that, okay, I do have content beyond even just technical expertise that I can write and be of value. That was one thing.
So very nice point. You know, one thing I intended to do with this podcast was, Ramsri, to get to give an audience the perspective of how you can create content of any form, right, through digital or whatever it is, and then slowly, organically monetize it to get some passive income.
Right.
So that's one of the goals. And like you see the challenge of putting up a store and doing things and how you can do it, right? For me, this is that quest where I can consistently create content and then monetize it. Now, you mentioned about Upwork, which exactly hits theme, and it is a gold mine, I feel, for anybody who is getting into, let's say, data science or trying to do anything creative with just creating content, right? There's a lot dearth of work, a lot of work that is there. And then can you just walk us through the process of like getting into Upwork? What is the process that looks like? How do you get your first bid and then do the work? And what does the entire process look like?
Yeah. So I started on Upwork almost this year actively. Again, I made my first dollar on Upwork this year itself. And I didn't make as much, somewhere in the order of like $1,800 to $2,000. And of course, I have been doing full-time jobs, so I did not focus on it fully as well. So I think with freelance platforms, like Upwork and similar, Fiverr, etc. So I do see them as double-sided sword, which is one, it is sometimes you can expend quite a lot of time on it and not get any value out of it. And the other way is you pick up few initial gigs and then go on to become like top-rated freelancer and begin your journey there. And I think one of the most important things that I would say to people is that in the initial days, do extra homework. What I mean to say is that whenever a job is posted, one traditional way is that giving your, let's say, a resume or online links or things like that and saying that, hey, I'm very suitable for this job and I can do this job, finish this job with your expected level of whatever desired level. That's one traditional way. And if you have like a very strong established portfolio, then that could be a good match and go on to become successful. But especially when you're starting out and do not have any gigs that you've already done, one way is to actually do almost 10% to a quarter of the work beforehand and show them that, hey, I've done these things. If you want, we can continue on. What I mean by that is, let's say someone posts about writing a copy, a marketing copy, or even like Instagram post, or they say that they have a channel and they're looking for social media manager. So instead of saying that I'm social media manager, I've done the things in the past, I can do this as well, try to pick up, try to understand what their blog, whatever their channel is about. If it's about, let's say, fitness, try to go through the previous posts and come up with some strategies / ideas that you can implement on their fitness blogs to grow the audience. So do almost 10 to a quarter of the work beforehand, especially for your initial gigs. So that will improve your chances of getting matched with the gig and you start on your journey. So that's one thing that helped me, where when someone posted for some data science project or even a marketing copy, I wrote a small 2-paragraph content that's not available online, just from my unique insights, and told them that I can expand this further. That helped me to land the initial gigs. And especially on Upwork, I think the process itself is not quite complicated. Of course, you need to give your tax details and other things. So setting up yourself on Upwork is probably less than a day's process. But how you get your first gig is where the biggest leap is. And once you start getting good ratings and things like that, you progress further. And there are cons to this in the sense that Upwork or other platforms, what they take as cut might not be in the best interest. I mean, might not be in the best thought of people who are freelancing. So even use LinkedIn to get some gigs. So especially use your space that you have to showcase your projects on the featured profile that you have, showcase mm-hmm. your projects and what you can, what services you offer, things like that. So use multiple channels, diversify, but pick up few niche things initially, and also establish your credibility online, which could be through blogging or similar things, either YouTube videos or making YouTube videos or blogging, so that you have credibility that people can trust.
Absolutely. And I think so, you know, a lot of data science folks come up and say like, hey, where can we find projects and all that thing. Mm-hmm. I think for a few quick bucks on Upwork, it's a good exchange for them to just learn some real-time projects,
right,
and gain some experience, and again show that experience, you know, for getting jobs outside also, right? Like when they're applying. So that's one unique way I think we could use Upwork.
Absolutely.
Nice. So I mean, you said you earned upwards of $1,800 on Upwork itself, right?
Right. That is true.
And was it all after commission or before commission?
Before commission. So I think there's like a 15 or 20% fee, Upwork fee.
Okay. Awesome. I think so. We can do another YouTube video on this, Ramshi, where we'll just explore the Upwork platform and see if we can find some areas that data scientists that are looking for some work can dig in and find something. That'll be an amazing piece to, you know, give the audience that feel that yes, you can get these projects.
Yeah. One more interesting thing, ways I use Upwork is that actually, I go on to Upwork to find interesting project ideas, because people post jobs. What are jobs? The problems that they have in their companies.
Correct.
So some post that I want to build XYZ with GPT-3, or I want to use certain, I want to use computer vision to solve problem X, and they detailly give the problem that they're solving. So I sometimes actually use Upwork to just find ideas, and it works similarly even in the marketing space. When you look into, let's say, even if you just type quotes or social media marketing or Instagram, things like that, you'll find various innovative ways how influencers are using and using in whatever social media channels to get things done. So when you see the job postings, it triggers your imagination and gives you more ideas.
Absolutely.
That was one interesting thing.
I have just signed up for that account and I have to fill the profile. I'm going to immediately do that now, because you have given a new perspective for what to look for in Upwork.
Yes.
And, you know, one of the motivations for me to get onto Upwork was now I've got this information of how podcasts are set up, how editing is done, how to launch your podcast, how to do marketing and all of that thing.
Right.
I was thinking, hey, why not, you know, see the skills at action for somebody else and get some editing work, right?
Absolutely.
So it was amazing. And partly I did it because, you know, some of my cousins are looking for some work to do. And I think podcasts are going to be, the audio format basically is going to be a lot more in the future.
Right.
And so to be able to just pick up an editing skill on audio is going to go a long way, because, you know, there will be a lot of requirement of editing audios. And so you're going to, even if you don't have a lot many skills, just knowing the techniques of editing an audio will help you a long way, right?
Absolutely.
So that was the thought. Awesome. So, I mean, a lot of interesting talks that went into this, Ramshi. So now I wanted to skip to this part where on Medium you write articles, and, you know, there are some articles that work, that some articles don't work, and some articles get you more money and some that don't, right? So can you give us some perspective on your experience on Medium and how that monetization looks like also?
Yeah. So I think since the beginning of my journey this year, Medium has been, I would say, consistent source of short income. Of course, it's not huge, but anywhere between $50 to $100 since the beginning of March, I've been getting something in that range. So it's a small passive income that has been consistently there for me. And especially on Medium, there are a few things that I follow. One is your content itself, and the second thing is how do you distribute your content or make it be viral ready. So these two things, I think especially for data science, if you look for general virality and other things, there might be a lot of articles. But how do you make your data science posts go viral? There's not like an actual plan that you can Google, right? Since it's a specific niche. So I did discover through my trial and error phase some interesting points. So I'll walk you through the journey of how I post something. Then you can infer all the things that are necessary. So first thing is that even if I finish my blog on Sunday afternoon or Saturday afternoon, I wait until Monday or Tuesday, usually, because there are few patterns that are consistent among any social platform. Those patterns are, just to name a few, one is every platform loves its own content. So if you go on LinkedIn and post a Twitter link, they are not going to give great reach. Or if you post any other thing, YouTube video, they won't give you as much reach as regular content on their platform. Similarly with Twitter. And there are patterns like this, which are common, where be it any platform, you have these things. And timing is again one more important thing. What I mean by that is, how much engagement, it could be likes, shares, reactions, that you get in the first couple of hours is a very strong factor for the social media platform to gauge whether you have viral content or it's a regular content that will die down soon. Correct. So your initial engagement is a good metric, be it on any platform. So what I do is I wait till Monday or Tuesday, and also the timing between 11 a.m. to 5 p.m., something like that. Not always. Let me say this, that sometimes I do not care that much about the virality factor. I just wrote it and I want it to be out there. Then I go and do it. But especially if it's a project that I worked for 2 months, then I have to hit every button right, because it's quite a lot of hard work that I've done, and it needs to reach the right audience. At least I need to make sure that it does that. So one is timing. Second part is, as soon as I finish the article, before hitting publish, I submit to a publication.
Okay.
So on Medium, you can write article and you can post on your own Medium page itself. But if you submit to a publication, it could be like Towards Data Science or the Startup or the Better Marketing or any of those publications. And publications also have specific catered audience. So Toward Data Science is only for data science. Then marketing folks have Better Marketing, things like that. So I usually go and submit my article to Towards Data Science or the Startup. And these people have quite a lot of reach as well. So if your article gets accepted into the publication, you get a huge boost. That is one major thing. And nowadays, most of the publications do not already accept a submitted article. When it is draft, when it is finished draft, then only you need to submit before you hit the publish. So once these two things are done, which is timing and submitting into a publication, and hopefully assume that the publication goes through and it's published in Towards Data Science. Now, take that article, go on to LinkedIn, go on to Twitter, again follow the same pattern of posting between, let's say, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. and post there. If it's a relevant article, then I post on even Facebook and put it on my WhatsApp stories as well. Then comes the next level of boosting, which is go on to Facebook groups and Slack channels that you're subscribed to. Then go, for example, I am part of many Slack channels through my entrepreneurship journey. I have Entrepreneur First Slack channel. Then because of working on few projects, I was on Coursera Slack channel, Udacity Slack channel, because I took an Anno degree. So all these Slack channels, I go and post in the respective channel. Again, within the channel, you have, within the Slack channel of Udacity, you have sub channels like community content, data science, and other things, right? So I post in the respective channels, in Udacity, in my entrepreneurship group, and sometimes, very rarely, if it's very relevant, even in some WhatsApp groups that are relevant in data science, co-learning lounge or things like that. Then Facebook groups, there are like deep learning Facebook group, artificial intelligence group. Each one has sometimes between 100K to half a million, 1 million followers, people in that. That gives you a high reach as well. And few important things are that always try to tag a biggie. By that, I mean, I'm not telling about randomly tagging someone influencer. Usually, let's say if you have used PyCaret library and made that project, tag PyCaret on Twitter. Tag PyCaret on LinkedIn. If I've used Hugging Face or even Scikit-learn, Pandas, tag Pandas on both of these. Then sometimes what happens is if they like, they reshare it or retweet it, then it gives you even higher boost. And if you work with multiple people, tag all of them. And so use tags wisely, of course. Don't tag an influencer and say, check out this article. I don't do that. But
keep it relevant. That's, keep it that's relevant.
Exactly.
Yes.
And I do all of these things to, for my things that I want to absolutely go viral or provide the platform to give that virality. And what happened was, one of the posts, there was, I wrote a small article on how to build an online portfolio as a data scientist. And that article went viral with almost 40K views in less than 2 days. And it was number one trending on the towards data science homepage.
Right.
So I did all of these things. And luckily that got the virality and boost. And it became very popular, that almost it came in my Google feed as well.
Oh, yeah, that message I've seen where you're saying your own post coming on your Google feed.
Yeah, that is true.
Okay, so awesome. Yeah, this I think what you have just told me, Ramshree, can be a big boost. Just the amount of engineering and trial and errors you have done to put it right is just amazing. It's just like, I was just, in my mind, I was thinking about corals. So when we do scuba diving, right, the corals require like just the right temperature, just the right salt, just the right, you know, the currents to be able to bloom or blossom or grow, right?
And
you're doing every little thing that could be done possibly to, you know, boost a post. I mean, you know, writing an article is one thing, and after that, I lose the energy to do all of these things, right? Like, boost it. But I think so it's more essential that you promote, you think like a marketeer, and you keep promoting, but keep it relevant. Like, just don't be bombarding it, but keep it relevant and think about all of these post-processing thing as a step rather than doing it once and for all, right? Do you take time to post and wait for it, and rather than doing it immediately.
Right, right. Absolutely yeah. True.
So awesome, awesome. Well, I mean, this was an interesting conversation, Ramshree. I think, with this, I want to also ask certain things for my personal learning.
Sure.
And so basically, you know, you have spoken about a lot of things. And my question is, obviously, I want to create content consistently in various forms.
Hmm.
And let's say articles and LinkedIn posts is something that I want to be doing. And eventually creating a data science course or something like. Hmm. So what tip do you have for me that will be helping me create content consistently on Medium at least, and to be able to put relevant content, I mean, ensuring that I put the right time and effort for that, writing that article, and you know, then post it out on Medium, and then hopefully see some things, some money I earn from that.
Great. So I think a few tips that I would say, I would give you some honest tips, which is that whatever niche audience that you have, already bank on that and expand. What I mean by that is, sometimes I write my philosophical musings or branding or things like that, but those things get probably 1/10 of the reads as my data science articles do. So one thing that I would say is that whatever niche and strength that you already have, keep mastering that and slowly expand in these other things as well.
Find
that balance. Now, because I have dabbled quite a lot with varied things, even on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Medium. But I've consistently noticed that if I write about like productivity, things like that, I don't have great audience on Medium. So it doesn't get the reach. So what I do is, for every 7-8 articles that I do on data science, I put in one or two of my non-data science stuff. Then it seems to be at least received okay-ish. That's one thing that I've noticed. And other thing is that, what I would say is that, aim for perfection in almost everything. What I mean by that is, you might have seen these posts, the PDF kind of posts on LinkedIn, right?
Correct.
Where you have like slide, you can click next.
Carousels, yeah. They are carousels, yes.
Yeah, carousels, exactly. So carousels, I've seen people who make black background and some, white background and some black text. But do you know how much effort I put in creating? It's not just about going into Canva, picking an image or writing some text. I even think, as a front-end developer, what are contrasting colors? If you have black background, yellow, light yellow and light green, and white. These are the only three colors that I use in my post to create that great high-quality contrast as well as presentation. So I don't just go and create something and say that it looks nice. I actually research up what are the contrasting colors. As a front-end developer, there is a tool even that you can give your image and it will give you, does it have a good contrast or not, whatever image that you give.
And what is that tool name?
I have to Google it up. I can send you later.
Sure.
But most of these front-end developers, designers, they kind of use these contrasting colors, right? Readability text readability.
Correct.
Even I don't put any random font. I try to see if I want to make a point, a strong point. I even research on, should I use sans serif or serif font, and what spacing is the right? Is it Times New Roman or some other thing, Roboto, things like that for this content? Because sometimes if I want to say something aggressively, I use an aggressive font. What I'm trying to say is that not every time I am that scientific, but you have to create that scientific mind of curiosity within yourself.
Absolutely.
And
in fact, Yep. Please go ahead.
And once you deliver such kind of, even if you're making 5 slides, and mm-hmm. if you deliver with such high quality, mm-hmm. people, you might get 10 likes with something, and with all these things, you might get up to 50 likes. Now, correct. People themselves do not realize great design. They know what a bad design is, but they don't know what a great design is. Mm-hmm. And you need to make sure that you hit all these things right, which is every minute details. Now, quite often I get asked this question that, see, you can't be great at everything. You cannot be a great front-end designer. You cannot be do these things so perfectly. So it is impractical. That's what people say. And most of the times it is correct. But I will say with one catch that once you master 10 different contrasting things, and you don't even need to master them. It is just the fact that you need to be aware that there are contrasting colors.
Correct.
You need to be able to Google that up when you're doing something. Just correct. Having that knowledge gives you a better designed PDF or carousel post.
Absolutely.
And what happens is, once you expand these things and know, over the time of, let's say, 2 to 3 years, you will build a repository of tools very, very unique for yourself that are obtained through almost combining 10 interdisciplinary things. You don't need to go and do a PhD in design, making front-end design, nothing like that. Just being aware that there is this tool, or you can even give your website into, put your website link into this website, and it will say contrast rating, how good is your readability. If you're just aware of this, then you can do that, right? Similarly, what I'm trying to say is that 2 to 3 years, you put in effort in every getting every minute detail right. In the long run, these multiple disciplinary things will come into use, that you will slingshot your content creation or thought process into a much farther level.
Absolutely. I mean, this is very helpful for me. It cleared one of the doubts that, you know, how much should I go, or how much should I learn, and how much should I know? Actually, it's very simple. Just make it, you know, understand these nuances and just tweak it. Use these tools wherever you can. I mean, there will be a tool to help you do everything. So just look at some of these tools and then put it together and consistently do that. Absolutely. And it will become like an artist who if you pick up certain nuances, you'll become an artist, and that work will be visible, and you know, anybody can call it out, say that this is this person's work, right? It'll become unique over time.
Absolutely.
Nice. Another thing I was just trying to point out, Ramshri, since you have built an AI artist sort of a tool, right? You know, maybe you should consider making tools for like these contrasts and font pairings and finding themes for font and all of that thing, right? So if I say I want to build something for aggressive, it'll give me a list of font pairings that I can use for showing aggression, right? It's abstract thing, right? But if you put all the fonts that we can get on Google and all of that thing, and see more or less match the themes or do clusters, I think so it'll be possible. Do you think it'll be a good project to do?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's definitely worthy of exploration. Maybe like we need to find couple of consistent things, package them into one thing, then you can create that kind of open source project or something like that, that caters to a suite of tools that are for this content creation.
Absolutely. So another last question, I want to end this podcast with, Ramshri, is that you know, what are some of the life philosophies that you live by which is relevant to content creation right now? And that is something, you know, you have evolved so many, done so many things, and it's evolved, right? But one life philosophy that is related to content creation and that works for you right now.
To be honest, like, I don't know if there is a life philosophy, But rather, in most of the things that I do, I see perfection should be an obligation. It's not a nice to have. Once you make it an obligation to have perfection, you will work towards that and you will craft even the finer details to put together and package it very well. And one more thing is that content creation is definitely a long game. And whatever I write now, most people do not know this, is that I, for the last 10 years, I made a Google document of all my thoughts. Oh. Every thought that I get, it's not like a diary where I write my stuff. It is more on all the abstract thoughts. It could be a startup idea or it could be a motivational quotes. And one of the very interesting thing is that some of the motivational quotes I take almost 1 year or 2 years to write, in the sense that first I get an outline in the, let's say one quote that start as an underdog, rise at such a pace that before people even realize dethrone the king and take charge.
Right.
So I get faint idea, let's say in my 5 years back when I was in US, I get idea like there's this underdog who is working hard, moving ahead in life. Then he needs to succeed. So I get that faint line. Over time, I get mastery, or once after like 2-3 months or few years, I revisit that line that I wrote. All of a sudden, I frame a quote that now underdog needs to rise, and he needs to rise at such a pace that people don't even realize that he is rising. And what is the biggest twist? The twist is when he dethrones the king that people know and claims himself, or now establishes himself to be the king.
Correct.
And for me, it happens like this. I maintain kind of my thoughts journal. It could be sometimes it's even just one word. It could be like perfection, or sometimes it's even just like a supersonic could be a word itself. Like hypersonic. Hypersonic or supersonic. One quote I just made out of hypersonic itself. I just wrote that word hypersonic. Then I reread that in the recent times after 5-6 years almost. Then I understood what is hypersonic. Like it is breaking the sound barrier beyond supersonic and going into it. What can you do with sound barrier if you're aggressive? Then out of that, like a quote was born on sonic boom. And quite a lot of content that I make, at least a quarter of the content is drawn from bits and pieces that I wrote over the last 10 years. So whenever I want to deliberately write something, I just open the document, go through all the things that I wrote to get some inspiration. Something strikes and I write,
And here's where I'm going to introduce you to another tool, the second brain concept, exactly what you're doing right now. You will see how powerful that will be. I'll show you. I'll show that to you, and we'll discover more of that. And let's do another podcast once we explore this concept thoroughly.
Absolutely.
But anyways, thank you for coming on to this podcast and supporting me on this, Ramshree. It was a wonderful conversation. I personally learned a lot from you. I'm sure the audience will definitely take away a lot in terms of how they should be creating content and thinking of monetizing and be in it for the long game and not just for the money or doing it just for the sake of doing it. Thank you again, as always, for the support, Ramshree.
Thanks a lot, Kunal. You've been a strong supporter both in bouncing off innovative ideas with me and discussing new novel ways of content creation, exploration. Thanks for all the hard work that you're doing for the community as well. Thank you.